from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Last week, Sister Lucia Fatima made steps toward beatification. This news comes just in time for the 100th anniversary of Our Lady's apparitions at Fatima. And next week, we look forward to the release of Archbishop Charles Chaput's new book, which offers a guide for living out our Catholic faith in an increasingly secular America. Welcome to Register Radio. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Register Senior Editor Matthew Bunsen. Matthew, good to have you.
As always, great to be with you.
Both of us had the chance to preview Archbishop Chaput's book, Strangers in a Strange Land, which we'll discuss with Register reviewer Father C.J. McCloskey later in the show. But first, Joe Pronishin, who's been making Register readers aware of everything Our Lady of Fatima, is here to talk to us about the cause of the canonization for Sister Lucia. Joe, this has been a really great week for someone like you who follows Fatima all the time. You got early news that there was something great happening in the cause of Sister Lucia. What was that news?
Quite by surprise. The Shrine at Fatima and the Diocese of Coimbra announced on February 13th, just a couple of days ago, that the diocesan phase of the canonization process for Sister Lucia had closed. And that is a big deal because it takes quite a long time to go through a diocesan phase, especially all the steps they have to accomplish and dot all the I's and cross all the T's correctly before anything can move on to Rome. So this is really a major step before beatification procedures can start in Rome.
There were a couple of reasons why the date that this announcement came was important.
It came right on the anniversary of Sister Lucia's death. She died just before she was 98 years old on a February 13th, 11 years ago. So this was the announcement came on the 11th anniversary of her death. There's so many dates that tie into Fatima in that regard, you know.
Absolutely, the 13th. You know, we should backtrack a minute, Joe, because we can't assume that everybody knows who we're talking about. So who is Sister Lucia, and what's her connection to Fatima?
Okay, Sister Lucia was the oldest of the three children shepherds that saw our Blessed Mother. She and her two cousins, Francisco and Jacinta Marto, were the three that our Blessed Mother chose, and they saw her six times from May 13th every month until October 13th, when Our Lady had the miracle performed of the spinning sun and the sun appearing as if it was going to crash into the earth that she had promised months earlier. The only time she didn't appear on the 13th was August, and she appeared on the 19th because the children were in jail on the 13th, which is another whole story. Communist-like government at that particular time tried to silence the children, even threatening them with death. Sister Lucia would be the oldest, and she was told by the Blessed Mother to learn to read because she was going to have to spread the messages, whereas Lucia and Francisco died very shortly thereafter, and they knew they were going to die. The Blessed Mother told them she'd take them to heaven shortly. Francisco died in 1919, she appeared from May 13th through October 13th, 1917, and 2 years later, Francisco died, and a little less than a year later, Jacinta died, but that was all known. And Lucia went on to become a Dorothean sister for over 20 years, and then she switched to the Carmelites, which she always wanted to go into, and she spent 57 years as a Carmelite before she died.
Wow.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. And Joe, though, when did the cause open? Because usually there's a five-year waiting period after the passing of a prospective saint. And so the cause opened, which seems to me to have been a very swift progression of the cause, especially given the numbers of witnesses and the obvious intensity of the devotion to Fatima.
Exactly, Matthew, yes. In fact, Pope Benedict, who waived the five-year waiting limit as dictated in canon law, for Pope John Paul II, did the same for Sister Lucia. It was only, I believe, 3 years after she died, and it was, the cause began in 2008, because she died just shortly after John Paul did. And so he waived that, and it took from 2008 till now, because they had, as you mentioned, the numbers were tremendous. They had to have 30 people working full-time on this. And that included eight for the historical commission that had to make sure everything was correct historically, and then, believe it or not, 18 theologians had to work. And they people don't realize, but in a saint's cause like this, they have to look at every single thing that is possible to find that the potential saint has written or has spoken in any way. So they want to make sure everything is in line, obviously, with church teachings and so on. And Sister Lucia had written her memoirs under, she didn't like to write, but in the sense that she wanted to be quiet about it, but she always did it under order. She was ordered by her prioress or by the bishop to put down all she could remember about her cousins, about the apparitions, about the Blessed Mother, and so on. And she did that on several different occasions. She was ordered to do that, and her diary alone is 2,000 pages. And then she was a voluminous letter writer, corresponding with cardinals, corresponding with every pope from Pius the 12th on.
Well, I was going to say, yeah. I mean, among the witnesses, you'd have a stellar cast of great figures in the church.
Exactly.
And Matthew, as you know, as a church historian, that doesn't make the canonization work any easier. It actually makes it tougher. What goes into this process?
Yeah, well, Joe's been doing a great job of explaining just how complicated this is. It really begins on the local level with these commissions. First, you secure permission from Rome to open a cause. And you have the title of Servant of God. And then you have to establish both these theological and historical commissions. Once they do their work and the entire process is approved on the local level, it then moves to Rome, where it is right now. And the postulator and vice postulator have the very difficult task of writing what's called a positio. It's a Latin term. It's essentially a position paper. It argues the heroic virtue of this person. And if that's approved by Rome, it can take years. That person is given the title of venerable. And then you still need a miracle for beatification. So it's a very painstaking process. And every step of the way, you need first-class scholarship and great care in making sure that the faith is upheld.
So where are we now in this cause, just to review that?
Right now, we are at the process of the positio, as Matthew mentioned. So that's once that's completed, that goes to Rome, and I'm sure they're going to be working post haste on that because they want to get this cause to Rome as soon as possible. Now that they have everything in place. And that requires positios can actually run 1,000 pages or more.
Wow!
You know, they want to make sure that every bit of heroic virtue that the person has exhibited during their lifetime is presented.
I've been involved in a couple of causes myself on the historical side, and I can guarantee that these positios they'll keep you up at night.
Yeah. So, you know, what's really remarkable about the timing of all of this is that it is the 100th anniversary of Fatima this year. Joe, there's so much going on related to that. What have you been working on related to the 100th anniversary?
Some of the things I've been working on, in fact, I just had a blog on of 10 very surprising facts about Fatima. People remember the main thing, so they should remember. As Sister Lucia says, the miracle isn't as important as the message of the Blessed Mother. They're always looking for, you know, especially the third secret. Is the third secret, totally revealed or not? And she says, of course it is. You know, we've been assured of that. Sister Lucia herself has assured us of that. But the point is, she says, not the secret. She says, the point is listening to the Blessed Mother. So I'm focusing on, that's one of the things I'm focusing on, and that's basically you know, to convert, change your life, do penance, say the rosary every day. You want peace? Say the rosary every day. Things like that. And then there are a lot of very interesting facts about Fatima that are connected with it that are just kind of fun and unusual. Things like the first pope to visit Fatima in person was Paul VI. Or when she was a Dorothean nun, sister, Lucia had to go to the seashore by Dotter's orders for 1 month of the year because she was so frail and sickly. And her mother prioress took some of the other nuns, too, who also needed that. And during one of those years, when she was in her early 20s, she actually rescued, saved the life of two children who were being pulled out to sea.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's fascinating things like that. Or I give you another one. This the latitude, the exact latitude where the shrine is in Fatima is on the same latitude where John Paul II had the altar for World Youth Day in Denver in 1993.
strange facts.
Strange little fact, but so interesting.
Joe, I just want to stop here because there's so much that we can talk about, and we're going to definitely have you back on to talk about more things, Fatima. And our listeners really need to follow your blog, which is at ncregister.com, and you just look for Joe Pronishin's blog because he's just constantly giving us this great information about Our Lady of Fatima and helping us to grow closer to Our Lady and to Christ as she would desire. Joe, thanks so much for being with us on this show, and we'll talk again soon.
Oh, you're welcome. I'll be looking forward to coming back soon. And thank you, Matthew.
And well, thanks for giving us one of the toughest questions you'll ever hear at a Catholic trivia contest.
Oh, okay. Now you'll know the answer.
When we return, we are joined by Register book critic Father C.J. McCloskey on Archbishop Chaput's new release, Strangers in a Strange Land. That book surely won't disappoint. This is Register Radio on EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, with Register Senior Editor Matthew Bunsen. We're both eager to talk about an interesting read, Strangers in a Strange Land, Living the Catholic Faith in a Post-Christian World by Archbishop Charles Chaput. Joining us is Father C.J. McCloskey, a church historian and a longtime book reviewer for the Register. Father McCloskey, good to have you.
It's always good to be with you and with your listeners.
Father, Archbishop Chaput has emerged over the years as one of American Catholicism's keenest observers of culture. How does this book add to his legacy of books?
Well, I agree with you completely. I know him personally, interviewed with him various times. I think he is more and more seen throughout the United States of America as one of the really top flight, not that we don't have many of them in the church, but is a man who really stands very strong in his convictions about the importance of our holy faith. So I think that's why he not only is a great man in himself, but he also writes books, which is not something mm-hmm. that most people in his position do.
Right.
But this book, particularly, this being a stranger in a strange land, is trying to help people to live the Catholic faith in a post-Christian world. I'm not quite sure that it really is post-Christian, because it really never can be pro-Christian, but I like the title nonetheless, because it's very known as a piece. So it's a wonderful book, and I was able to review it. And I just say that what he's trying to do is give us a lot of hope that that the best is ahead and not behind us.
That's true.
And we have to have that. And it's true. I think even with some of the good things that have happened, depending on what your particular area is, but we know, look at what's the fact right now, that we have many people in the Catholic who are Catholics who are in the Trump his particular role. So he has hope. Where there are a lot of people there who are very good Catholics in many areas
of his administration, right?
Of the administration, and they're right there.
Right. Now, Father McCloskey, you know, it's a book of hope, but it sure does chronicle a dark period.
Well, there is a guard, and there has been, but that, well, I agree with him to some extent, yeah, that and he knows better than I am, I guess, but I think he's pointing out of some of the bad things
right.
that obviously are in the post-Christian world, because it does call Chris that way. So we have, it's a book to certainly take a good look at in that regard. In other words, to look at what we have in terms of the Christianity in the United States, things of that sort, were things we've talked about in this book. And also the question of the technologies. And that's very big. Of course, we all like technologies. this type of thing
that's
ourselves.
Right.
they're in themselves, they're not bad, but they, of course, also can be used and have been in many ways into things that are not right. And also, he's right in another way that the sexual behavior of identity, the growth of federal power over discarding religious rights, well, they're all there. I mean, he lays it out, and it's not that he's, saying, let's just go out there and do nothing or go for the hills, but we, as Christians, as Catholic Christians, the true faith should be doing what we can to realize that the answer is up to us. So we're not just going to go down and give some fight to this. And I think, as I said a moment ago, that I think there's a good possibility that things are getting better. And he also is very strong talking about throughout the rest of the world in this particular book. You know, how things the Catholic Church is doing extremely well. In Africa, it's even in France, it's starting to become more Catholic. So there are a lot of good things. So he knows what he's doing when he wrote this book, because he gives us everything, telling us the bad stuff or what's going on from his perspective. But at the same time, he gives us that energy ourselves in terms of the nature of the church, because the church cannot go. The church is forever.
Father, I love the fact that in this book that the Archbishop is able to bring in all of these wonderful cultural references. He has a whole chapter devoted to the Eloys and the Morlocks from The Time Machine. But he also relies very heavily on St. Augustine's powerful imagery of the city of God and the city of man.
Yes.
How does he see that drama playing out in American life?
I think it's conversion, a question of conversion, we were just speaking about a moment ago. That's what the Archbishop sees, that we need to convert. Even if we're Catholics, we need to convert. We have to be better. lot better and recognize it's up to us and not up to the Pope and not up to this and the other. It's for the lay people, for the most part, who are the ones who obviously are the ones who are going to make a difference so that we can make our help to make our church in this country as it has been many times in the United States, where we've had a lot of Catholic life and was almost dominant in some ways, even though what there were the Protestants around. Now we could go on through some very difficult times, which we don't have to go into at this point. But I think he wants us to realize that it's up to us, each one of us, to give ourselves completely, and that we give ourselves to the church first, obviously, and we respect the state, but we also are people who have to take care of the state in one way or another in our action, in the way we deal, in our family life, in our parish, and in the work. All of this, I think, goes there.
Father McCloskey, he talks of something that I think it's important to bring out because, you know, the theological virtue of hope is very different than just general optimism.
Right.
Obviously, hope has a true and real awareness of what is wrong. And that's why I think the book has some darkness to it, because it's obviously looking at something, a time of our culture and of our world that can be dark in many respects, but also... Yes. That has there's something to hope for, and so this distinction is really quite important for understanding how the Archbishop intends to direct his readers, the difference between hope and optimism.
Yes, I think that's a very good way to put it, and he knows he's been for a long time as a bishop in different places, and he himself knows what it means. And to he of course was perhaps best known right recently because with Philadelphia when our Pope now came, he was the one who took care of that and did a terrific thing.
That's true.
So
I think
it's hope. Hope is the thing and action.
Absolutely. Hope and action. And Matthew, you know, you had the chance to review the book like I did this week.
Yeah.
What were some of the things that jumped out to you about this book? I mean, you, like Father McCloskey, are a church historian, so you have some perspective, too, on what Archbishop is writing about because you've written about it as well.
Yeah, well, I mentioned all of the cultural references, which are very helpful, I think, for the reader today because it can send you off in a host of different directions as to do more reading and more research. The Archbishop's research is just impeccable. One of the things that really did jump out to me, though, is the impact of Enlightenment thinking on American life, on politics and culture, and the devastating results of some of that that we see all around us.
Yes, it's very interesting. Father McCloskey talked about technology, you know, and just how in the course of progress, and I'm talking in that about the years that go by since the Enlightenment, that kind of progress. The course of progress, we have technology has taken a greater and greater hold of our lives, and it has touched every aspect of our lives from economic to the family life, to the intimate life of a husband and a wife, to the way we communicate with each other, to the way we get our information and our news. And it in itself can be neutral, but at the same time, we have to recognize how profound the impact of technology has been on our lives and how it sometimes can distort things. And Archbishop really gets into that in this book. He's gotten into that in several other books. Father McCloskey, we're all out of time, but I do want to let our listeners know about two other book reviews that you have done for the Register recently. One was on a book about the natural law, which is so important at this point in time. It's called After the Natural Law by John Lawrence Hill, and also a book recently by by Peter Kreeft, and it's I Burn for Your Peace, and it's a book about St. Augustine. So thanks for those book reviews, and I encourage our listeners to go ahead and read those. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Not at all. I hope to do it again.
Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN for much more news, analysis, and commentary on the church and the major events of the day. Remember to go to ncregister.com. For my co-host Matthew Bunsen, our producer Jeff Burson, I am Jeanette DeMello. Up until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
In the famous cleansing of the temple, Jesus overturned the money changers' tables and told them to stop making his Father's house a den of thieves. You're a temple too, you know. God's word tells us, do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit? When I was first teaching my son about modesty, he saw a billboard of a half-clothed woman and said, that's gross, right, Dad? That's not gross, I said. That's too sacred to be thrown on a billboard. You see, God doesn't hate sin because we're gross, but because it isn't worthy of us. And that realization changes how we approach sin. It brings us from self-loathing to striving for fulfillment, from negative guilt that tears us down to positive repentance that builds us up. When you consider your failings, consider them in light of the sacredness that God sees in you. You're His temple, you know, and He's passionate about cleansing you because He loves you. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
60 Seconds with Mother Angelica.
What would you do if all the TVs in this country suddenly shut off? What would you do? Oh, I bet you go nuts. The kids be biting their nails. You'd be getting grouchy. And let's go for a walk. Where? Anywhere. And then we got to walk back. I mean, you can't praise it. You know, you can't praise it. We're so attacked. What do you do when you get home at night? Click. You got to want to know all the terrible things that happened today. That's all you're going to get. I've thought of having a channel of good things. I don't think anybody listens. Just good things. Wonderful things. The sunrise, the sunset. Going in the woods and walking through the woods and feeling the presence of the Almighty God. Wow.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Hi, this is Joan Lewis in Rome. Thanks for listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.